you and your team. Members of the public who are here and the parliamentary staff. Good morning and welcome. This is our first meeting of the year. I'm told that today is the 14th of February. For those who celebrate, happy Valentine's Day. We start in date. I'm sure the Department of Energy will apologize for letting us start so late. But scheduled the meeting to start at 9:30. I think the honourable members will accept the apology after hearing it. So I think we should get the apologies from the secretary, because we don't have time now. But maybe if we hear the Department of Energy first, why are they letting us start so late?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. We would like to start with the presentation. However, I would like to express our sincere apology for the late start. We did not anticipate that the queues might be a little bit longer than usual today, and we apologize for that. There was also a change of times, which some of our technical team members did not get on time. The meeting is now starting at 9:30, not at 10. We apologize for that.
Okay. It shouldn't happen again. I don't mind if you have to wait for members of parliament here, but they shouldn't wait for you. Can we get apologies, comments?
Thank you, Chair. The following apologies. Honorable Kluama, who's attending another urgent meeting, seems unable to attend. Then we also received an apology from the Minister of Energy, Chair, who had to attend an urgent meeting as well, so she's unable to attend the meeting. Those are the apologies received, Chair.
Honourable members, those are the only two apologies. I'm told that only Honourable Dlamini hasn't apologised. Honourable Makai, do you want to introduce the new member from your party?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we are a very empowered party, and she's a very formidable colleague of mine, so I'll allow her to definitely introduce herself, but I'm very glad to announce that Ms. Dandeka Qaba has joined us on our committee, and she's very welcome, and I hope that you will all be very nice to her, but in the meantime, she can introduce herself.
No.
Good morning, colleagues. Good morning, everybody. As my colleague have said, my name is Thandeka Qada. I'm the new member of the Portfolio Committee for Energy. I'm not sure if you want me to go further to say where I'm coming from, and which portfolios I've saved before. Otherwise, I don't mind if you can give me 10 minutes to do that, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Honorable Makai and Honorable Kada. I didn't ask that you should take over the meeting. Said you must just introduce the new member. I didn't hear that, Honorable.
You're welcome, Honorable Taneka. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks, Honorable Faku. Can we... Are we ready now? Are we get to get the presentation? Deputy Minister, are you going to speak before we get the presentation? Thanks very much. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and our visitors here, members of the press, and again, for those who celebrate this day, happy Valentine's, whatever that means.
So clearly, you don't celebrate it.
Chairperson, let me also apologize for the late arrival of the officials. I think we also need to check up a bit our communication because the change of time came very late and that did cause some confusion around that. But for me as well, if they hadn't arrived late, I would have also been late because I was also not aware of the change of venue. So just wanted to apologize for that aspect. And I must say that as a member of the African National Congress, I'm very proud to see that our efforts are bearing fruit, that the DA has come to realize the value of having women in some of these very critical portfolios. So congratulations to them and welcome Tandega. Yes, you shouldn't just be in the health and, you know, you should also be the core energy because without energy, you know, won't have a lot of these other things. And we wish Van Dalen all the best for moving backwards, but I'm sure he enjoys where he was. But other than that, it's good to be in the new year and meet all the members, and I see everybody seems to be in good spirits. Chairperson, today I think is a very important day for us because we are presenting two of the processes, if I may call them that, the IRP and the IEP, which have become a bit of a boogeyman. Everything that goes wrong now is because there's no IEP, there's no IRP. There's been quite a bit of consultation that has gone on around these issues. And if I may also take the liberty, Chairperson, to say once more that as public representatives, we also urge members to also please participate in the processes when we meet communities because we do represent those constituencies. So it would be important that they are also able to be there so that we make sure that this link of Parliament with the people continues to be there. It's an empowering process, and it would definitely assist all of us. Without much ado, I think we'll then get an update of where the process is at and what we expect to be happening in the coming few weeks and months. With your permission, Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to the DG for the presentation of the IEP and the IRP. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the old member is Honorable Van Dalen, not Van Dam. I do take note of the point you're making, Deputy Minister about us being part of the process of the consultation. So that when you consult, we can also have the benefit of listening to what the communities have got to say. You're quite right. It's an important point. We'll take that into account. DG, who's going to make the presentation?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We thank the committee as well for having been adding quite a very valuable input into this process. We have had public participation to date as per our program, and some of the members have participated. There have been some robust debate. What the team led by the DDG will reflect is on the content, and that some of it has not been shared with the committee as part of our presentation, and also to reflect on the roadmap that we are going to be following towards the finalization of this particular assignment, and also to indicate Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members that we have not concluded the process. We still have to consult with other stakeholders at an intergovernmental level, as well as NETLEC and the Cabinet later. So we have not concluded the process, but as per your invite, this is just to give an update of where we are, what has been done, what outstanding work still needs to be done, and when will it be done and concluded, and come back to this committee with the final product that we expect to get as per the inputs, and how the inputs are received will then be infused into the final assignment. So the DDG, who is the project manager for this particular assignment, DDG Alpane, will lead the presentation and supported by colleague Jacob DDG from the department. So with your permission, Honorable Chair, I will hand over to DDG Alpane to lead on the presentation.
Yes, DDG.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, my Deputy Minister, colleagues. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me, Chair, to introduce the colleagues from the department. Jacob Mbele will do the presentation on the Integrated Resource Plan, which is the electricity portion. And then the two colleagues sitting to the left of Mr. Mbele, Mr. Robin Naidu and Mr. Motlatsi Sozonyane, will also cover the Integrated Energy Plan. Just to indicate that we have submitted a very long presentation. This is for completeness. The idea is not that, you know, we go through each and every one of those slides, but we're worried that we do not want to be seen to be shorting the information that we share with the committee. And so what I will focus on is just a quick update to contextualize the Integrated Resource Plan, and then we'll go into the two presentations. Chair, just some background quickly is the Integrated Energy Plan is an instrument out of the Energy Act of 2008, in terms of which the Minister of Energy is required to produce a plan which outlines the future energy aspirations of the country across the board. So it is not sectoral, it covers energy in the electricity, gas, and the liquid fuel sense and more. For example, energy efficiency issues are outlined there as well. The law requires that the Energy Act must be updated every year. And one can imagine the, this was back in 2006, looking forward, and our experience is that we actually need to revisit that because it is not practical to do that given the consultation process that we have to embark upon. The consultation process, I'll go into detail, but it's taken at least 6-7 months so far. So on the time that it goes through a cabinet for permission to consult to the time that you finish consultation, it literally takes a month. That's the Integrated Energy Plan. We will share some of the issues around that. Then the Integrated Resource Plan, also an instrument in the Electricity Act of 2006, in respect of which the Minister of Energy is required to, through this instrument, to outline in line with objectives that have been set by government to determine what the energy mix entails. So the minister uses this instrument together with the energy regulator. The energy regulator is then required by law to license new generation capacity in line with the integrated resource plan. Now, because these are forward-looking plans, nobody can predict the future, and therefore it becomes incumbent that the plans get updated, because we make a lot of assumptions, which we will share, and we know that those assumptions need to be robust enough. It is not about the assumptions being correct. They could never be correct in that way, but it's the fact that they need to be useful in them. So we will share them. Maybe lastly, to indicate that insofar as the two processes, what we, as my Director General has indicated, we've embarked on, we call them roadshows. So basically what happens is we've been through all the major cities in the country, all the provinces, in order to solicit public input, in order to consider the inputs that various interest groups have in this process. The DM has indicated this is, you know, we do not purport that this represents consultation in the classical sense. We're required to consult in a particular way by law. So, for example, we have not yet consulted at NEDLAC. This is planned for this month. That's a statutory requirement, but over and above that, we believe that we have solicited as much input as possible. There are some, if you like, improvements in the way that we consult. We have a website that we have developed in the department, and people are allowed to make input in there, and the dedicated teams that, you know, synthesize the inputs that are being made. But as you can imagine, insofar as the people out there, the communities who do not have access to the internet and so on, you know, there is room. So we try and do that in a different way. What has happened is that in the, we call them PPPs, we try and introduce the topic so that people can understand that this is not just a lofty plan that is for certain people and not for them. The issues around access are one of the objectives, or some of the objectives that we would like to cover. So, Chair, that is where we find ourselves. We concluded on the 3rd of February, which was two Fridays ago. So this is very fresh out of that consultation process, and we're busy collating the various inputs into a report, and we will give you an update about some of the things that arise out of that. What are the next steps? Once we have done the further consultation, as I indicated, the statutory consultation, but also in relation to what might also be bilateral engagement. So for those that, you know, might have missed out, this is not the end of it. We still would like to entertain a bilateral engagements to the extent that there's still people that want to make input. Is that then we have to take it through the intergovernmental process in parallel, which is the other government departments who still have a say or still have a lot to contribute towards this process, and then it will go to cabinet as, if you like, milestone two. It's a four milestone process insofar as the integrated resource plan is concerned. We are now have done milestones one and two. And we would then, having done that, filtered some of the valuable information through, then develop the various scenarios. So we'll consider what the future might look like in various formations. For example, if we have a future that is completely renewable-based, you know, we would like to test that. If we would want to have a future that is heavily interconnected with our sub-region, our neighbors, by way of hydro and so on, by way of gas, we would like to test all of those things and obviously try and strike the trade-off between these various scenarios. We would like to deal with the question around, you know, nuclear. It is the biggest, if you like, controversy around, you know, how do we address this. But this process is able to then show the evidence and the facts around a whole lot of these things that they would be looking at. That would then constitute milestone number three, and we would then take all of these different scenarios and balance them. This is now the trade-off process. So In other words, how do you then create the necessary harmony between the various scenarios? We'll call that the balance scenario, and that would be presented again publicly by way of it will be a publicly available document. We would then solicit input in relation to what that balance scenario looks like. Then this eventually goes back to cabinet with all the inputs from the public for cabinet to promulgate what we would call the policy adjusted. But just to give you some reflection on what happened the last time around is that cabinet had then at that point instructed us to go back and solicit even more consultation. So, Chair, I guess what I'm trying to indicate here is that in terms of timelines, we believe that we might be able to get to a point by around end of May, June, right, by way of presenting the scenarios and all of that. And then, depending on the direction that we would get, we might open it up again for some time for additional comments. Our intention, DG, is that we should be finished with this process at the beginning of the third quarter of this year, which means around just after August, September this year, we should be able to then, you know, sit with both the integrated resource plan and integrated energy plan that are going to be used for the energy plan going forward. I apologize, I've taken some time, but I thought that the idea was that so that you have a background, and then when the slides come, it gets very technical, it looks at various issues, and if I can maybe just appeal to the colleagues to try and not belabor. These are the experts, incidentally, and they tend to go into a lot of detail. We will start then with do we start with the integrated resource plan, Chair, or with the integrated... With your permission, you check.
Yes, you explained that the integrated energy plan is the overarching, so maybe it's better to start there. So, but just explain, unless you're going to come back to this. These timelines are very important. If you can be clearer and firmer on them. May, June. So when you say we want to be sitting with both the policy documents by end of September, what do you mean sitting? You're saying that you want to be sitting with both the documents by end of September. What do you mean by that?
No, Chair, perhaps I wasn't listening to myself properly, but what I meant was that there are certain things that we have programmed, that we have control over, and we would like to finish those things by a certain time. So, for example, we've received a lot of presentation. I think we had about 64 different entities making comments on this, and one of the exercises we need to do is to tabulate all the comments and indicate how we have dealt with them. Have we rejected them? Have we incorporated them? Or have we, you know, used them in a particular way? Now, that takes time. And once we have done that, Chair, which we believe it should be before the end of March, say by the end of March, which is in a month and a bit, we should be able to then, you know, produce an update report around milestones 1 and 2 of the integrated resource plan. And then at that point, we would share it. And Chair, perhaps what I omitted to indicate in the middle of all of that, DG, my apologies here, is that we're sitting in the committee here. Obviously, the committee will have its own input and its own recommendations, and we will then factor those in. It's not like we're saying this is how, if the committee says we'd like to have, you know, additional information or hearings or whatever, you know, we are in your hands. And that's why I'm saying from a timeline point of view, the sitting refers to that which we have control over, and then depending on what the direction would be around particularly consultation, you know, Chair, we would be in a position to take it forward, if that makes sense.
Okay, so
continually. Who's presenting the IEP?
Thanks, Chair, DM, members of the Parliament and the public. So what I'm going to do is to give an overview of IEP and also give an overview of the demand section. And my colleague will give some analysis on the supply side. So IEP, I think, as we know that energy is the lifeblood of the economy, it impacts a number of sectors, even our individual livelihoods. So we actually need integrated energy planning to ensure current and future energy services in such a way that we are effective, efficient, and also take into account some environmental impacts. So there's been, I think, lack of integrated planning in the country. So this has led to under investment in a number of ways. So especially or mainly in the two sectors, electricity sector and the liquid fuels sector. So what we are trying to do here is to actually try to close that gap. Because the planning has been driven by mostly commercial investments. So now with the integrated energy planning, we're trying to put everything together so that at least we close the gap between the infrastructure, mainly in both electricity and liquid fuel side of things. So this started from the IEP actually comes from the white paper of 1998, so which is the primary document that guides, subsequent policies, strategies, and legislation within the energy sector. So it actually provides policy statements which government intends to actually achieve. So, and then in this paper we have mainly five objectives that the IEP is trying to address. So we want to have access to affordable energy, improve energy governance, stimulate economic development, manage related environmental impacts, and also security of supply through diversity. These are the main objectives from the white paper, and then we are trying to address this thing in the IEP. So IEP it's linked to a number of plans. We have a national development plan, new growth plan, and 9-point plan. So what happens is that these plans are at the higher level, and then IEP takes some input from some of these plans, and also in other plans that are also published within the environment. We mention we can mention transport sector, transport plan, environmental policies, carbon tax policy, water policies, industrialization policies. These are all policies that are linked to IEP in a way, because we have assumptions that come out of these kind of plans. We try to align to all the plans in the country. So the energy planning process. We normally look at external factors, constraints, which goes into the energy system. We have extraction, supply, and demand in the energy system, which we'll highlight later. We normally look at global supply and demand markets, cost of technology, funding, and credit entities. These are external factors that affect IEP, that when we formulate mainly assumptions, we look at these dynamics. And then we also have constraints that we take into account, like water supply, carbon emissions, and financial resources. And our aspiration is to actually, from IEP, is to be able to stimulate the economic growth, green economy, socio-economic development, industrialization, and then socio-equality. So these are some of the aspirations that we have from IEP. So if you look at the scope, we look at everything from primary energy until energy end use. Conversion technologies, we look at secondary energy carriers, end use technologies in different demand sectors, and then we also look at energy services in these sectors. And some of the results that we'll show will actually highlight some of these sectors. So, IEP within government is related to a number of plans, mainly in the department. So if you look at demand sides, we have energy efficiency strategy, which is incorporated in the IEP. We also look at universal energy access strategy, beneficiation strategy, and transport. So these affect the demand side of things, and then they are also taken into account. The supply looks at mainly diversity of supply and security of supply, which also broken into liquid fuels and electricity. And then electricity now relates to IRP, which will be presented later. This is just some of the plans, roadmaps that we have in the department that are linked to the IEP. So IEP try to address mainly 8 objectives, ensure security of supply, minimize cost of energy, promote job creation and localization, minimize environmental impacts, minimize water consumption, try to address diversity of supply resources, promote energy efficiency, and promote energy access. These are the 8 objectives that are taken into account into the IEP, and then when you present the results, some of them will be highlighted. So I think at this stage, I just wanted to give maybe progress so far in terms of the technical work that has gone into the IEP. In June in 2013, the draft IEP report was approved by Cabinet for public consultation, so which started September to November 2013, and then we went to all 9 provinces. And January to September 2014, we started with intergovernmental policy working groups, where we had a number of multi-stakeholder subcommittees on different sectors, which were also able to review some of the assumptions that we have in the IEP, and then recommended that we incorporate some of things such as externalities into the IEP. So these representatives come from industry, academia, civil society, industry, and so on and so forth. So these are people that were coming from different sectors, which formed these subcommittees to help to improve the content of the IEP. And then based on the output obtained from these committees, we're able to include externalities which were not there in the first draft, the determination of job potential by some of the technologies in the IEP. Also look at peak plateau decline emission limits from the some of the environmental impact constraints that we needed to look at. We also had some additional scenarios, conducted some impact assessments, on these scenarios, and then also updated some of the technology cost and microeconomic assumptions. So 2015 August to February 2016, then we also obtained input from Ministerial Advisory Committee on Energy, and then we have incorporated some of the comments from the committee. So I think I've already highlighted some of these updates, and then we actually now concentrated more on the liquid fuels supply scenarios because some of the work is done in the IRP, so this presentation, we're trying to concentrate more on the liquid fuels, even though we also have some IEP. So I think there are some, these are some of the things that I've lighted. I'm trying to rush because of time, I think. That's why. So some of the externalities that we looked at were negative and positive. You have to mention a few water pollution that we looked, and then we also looked at the positive ones in terms of localization. So this I've already mentioned, we had to cost some of these externalities. So, and then we also have job categories that we look at. We look at direct supply, indirect, induced, permanent, and temporary jobs. We try to categorize jobs so that it's easier to see the temporary and the permanent jobs for the technologies which appear in the IEP. So this is localization potential, which is also divided into categories. I think I've already done this. So these emission constraints, we look at a number of sectors, and then there are limits for different sectors, and then we look at end use 2%, agriculture and 5%, and so on and so forth. So for each limit, for each sector, they are limits that are put there, and these are some of the constraints that are taken into account into the current IEP. So we also have scenarios. We have core scenarios and also have scenarios that are related to liquid fuel side, because the electricity ones will be considered in the IRP, like Mr. Ompi already said. So these are some of the assumptions you look at. They are in the report. If there is a need to actually clarify some of these assumptions, we'll do that. And then we also have the ones that we added to test some of the scenarios. These are just additional scenarios that we have. So IEP process since February 2016, we have the electricity supply, which is mainly dealt by IRP, and then it will be presented soon. What we try to do is to actually improve our analysis in the liquid fuel side, and then we also look at gas. So IEP is like now you're looking at three legs: electricity, liquid fuels, and then gas. So this is what I've just explained. It shows the key parameters in each of these legs that we want to concentrate on. So what we are going to actually present for IEP, mainly because I think of time, is mainly on the liquid fuel side, but most of the work is actually in the report. So these are the scenarios that are mainly related to liquid fuel sites, which my colleague will go into details. We can also clarify some of the assumptions in these scenarios. So I think now I would like to actually move to the demand section quickly, just give an overview of the remand section. We concentrated on the transport, but it doesn't mean that we don't have results for other sectors. It's just that for time, we included transport, but can also find the same information about other sectors in the report. So what happens is that we normally look, this is just an overview of the model that we used, and then we look at the assumptions that goes into these models, and then we also look at the actual models and the output. So I'll just go straight to the output, and I'll try to explain how we actually do it. So in the transport sector, because we are looking at the transport sector for IEP presentation, but you can also actually get the same information about other sectors. So we normally look at five sectors: agriculture, industrial sector, which is mining and manufacturing. We look at residential. We look at transport sector, and then the commercial sector. So I'll just go through the transport and then highlight the results from other sectors. So what we normally do is to look at the sales numbers of vehicles, because these technologies actually consume energy. So we see the number of sales now and going forward, and that helps us to be able to calculate the energy consumption. So if you look at the slides, you'll see that most of us actually buy petrol cars, small ones, with the green bar there, and that shows the sales numbers of this thing, and then that means more petrol consumption going forward. So this curve just shows the how long we keep our cars. We normally keep our cars longer, so that also has an impact on the energy consumption, because we don't actually buy more efficient cars quick enough, so that affects the energy consumption in the sector. What it simply means is how long we keep our cars. So you can see that we actually keep our petrol cars longer. And then if you take the sales and how long we keep our cars, and then you put everything together, you will actually have the population of vehicles in the country. So those technologies will help us to actually estimate the energy in the sector, mainly diesel and petrol. And then we have classified them by different dimensions and so on and so forth. So what we are also trying to do is to actually look at the cars that we have on the road, the new ones and the old ones. So this graph just tracks the old cars that were bought way back in 1984 and so on and so forth until the ones that are remaining plus the new ones. So this is what it's trying to do. The number of years down there just shows the sales years, and then the and then how long we actually keep them until now. So the other variable apart from the population of vehicles is vehicle kilometers. Because we want to see how busy different technologies are, because that helps us to see the energy consumption. So you can see that motor cars, private cars, are busier than most cars, followed by commercial vehicles because of freight transport. What we also look at is the energy services. Sometimes we want to see how many people are transporting goods and services, and then to see which is the cheapest or least cost way of actually allocating technologies to these services, so that we actually come up with the cheapest way of transporting people and commodities, people and goods and services. So these are 10 kilometers, similar to passenger kilometers. When you transport goods, you want to see maybe the cheapest way of allocating this in a way. So the last thing that we look in the transport model is the fuel economy, how efficient these cars are. Because the more you go forward, we are expecting more efficient cars, and that also affects the energy consumption. So if you look at three things, the first thing that I said is the population of cars, how they grow, And the second component is how active or busy they are on the road, and also how efficient they are. Those three variables will be able to actually help you to calculate energy consumption going forward. So this is just some of the highlight of other energy consumption, liquid fuels mainly. You look at petrol, it's only in the transport sector, LPG, it's in residential, mining, manufacturing, and commercial. IP, which is paraffin, is mainly the residential sector. So diesel is mainly in transport, mining, and agriculture. So this is just to show that we also have results for other sectors. So, and then this is the same information categorized differently. I think at this stage I will call my colleague to go into liquid fuel supply side.
Time move fast,
Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, DG. I'm going to take you through the liquid fuel supply scenarios. I'm just going to highlight what we need to build in terms of new refineries. In terms of the studies that we do, we look at all these variables here. There are seven in all, but the key variables are the new capacities that we will build and the costs of those new capacities. We also try to adhere to the emission constraints. We look at the water and so forth. In terms of existing capacity, we've got over 700,000 barrels per day of refining capacity, made up of four crude refineries with around 500,000 barrels per day. Then we have Sasol and PetroSA. The assumptions we make is that PetroSA will run out of gas at some stage. We show that in our report. We also look at Sasol. We assume Sasol is also going to undergo some problems, not in terms of coal, but in terms of gas as well, and it's also running out around 2040. So based on that, if we look at what new capacity we need in terms of refineries, we actually, for the five different scenarios, we see that gas to liquids coming online in 2027, 2040, 2045. We see coal to liquids coming online in 2041. Capacity of those refineries, the gas to liquids, is around 70,000 barrels per day. The added capacity that comes online in 2045 is around 140,000 barrels per day. The coal to liquids is around 80,000 barrels per day. The key scenario that we also look at here is a security of supply scenario, where we actually build a crude refinery, and that crude refinery is actually forced into the model. It's not an option where the model optimizes. In terms of security of supply, we force the model to actually build a crude refinery in 2026 with a lead time of 10 years. And this slide just simply shows what happens in terms of capacity going over time, and we see that going over time, our capacity is meant to actually increase, actually exceeding 800,000 barrels per day by 2050. And for the security of supply scenario, as expected, we'd expect our capacity to actually exceed 1 million barrels per day. This graph simply shows you the production from the different supply options. We see domestic production decreasing over time. That is our blue graph with closure of refineries around 2040 and also around 2030 with PetroSA going out around 2030. In terms of imports, we see imports increasing over time to cater for the closure of refineries. The green graph simply shows all the new refineries that are going to come online and what their production states are going to be like. This graph here simply shows the different new refineries that come online. As you can see, the gas to liquids come online in 2027 and start producing immediately. Thereafter, around 2040, when your coal to liquids come online, you have more production from those refineries. In the security of supply scenario, when we bring in the crude refinery in 2026, we have a lot of capacity in the country and also producing. So final production for that scenario, security of supply, is around 20 billion liters by 2050. What happens in terms of imports and the ports? In order to import these products, we need to look at what's happening at the ports as well. So this graph actually shows the imports through the ports, and the outer envelope is the capacity that's available at the ports. As we can see, the base case, the cleaner pastures, resource constraint, and security of supply scenarios are all fine. It's only the green shoot scenario that seems to have a problem in terms of capacity through the ports. So we'll have to look with Transnet to see how we could handle that scenario. In terms of imports, we see that crude oil imports remain fairly constant for the four scenarios. It's only with the security of supply scenario that you get a lot of crude that's coming in because of the new refinery. The total imports there is around 968. Also, we see we import a lot of diesel as compared to the other products. In terms of domestic production, the domestic refineries produce a lot of diesel as expected, closely followed by petrol. A lot of production in terms of the new refinery that comes online in 2026. These are the total volumes that we're looking at over time, right up to 2050. I think this slide here is of interest. In terms of the five different scenarios, what is the discounted cost? We see that the green shoot scenario, because of its higher demand over right up to 2050, would have a total cost exceeding 3 trillion rands. The base case and all other scenarios lie between 2.5 and 3 trillion rands. The cleanest option, or the cheapest option, is the cleaner pasture scenario, which is just over 2.5. And in the cost, we also look at the effects of actually putting in CF2 modifications on our refineries. We've costed that, and we've looked at fuel costs, capital costs, and so forth. And we have also looked at crude oil refineries, the crude imports, and the refined product imports. Another serious concern is the issue around sustainability and CO2 emissions. We've put in the caps, the red caps on each of the scenarios, and we can see that the model actually constrains the production from each of the refineries, so we don't exceed our CO2 cap emission limits. And this also impacts on what type of refineries we can build. Surely, if we're capping CO2 emissions, we'll have to hold on coal-to-liquid refineries until later on when SAFL is actually taken out of service. In terms of water consumption, we see water consumption increasing in the short to medium term, going to around 40 billion liters, and thereafter decreasing with time as new refineries come online. Of note in this slide here is we don't have any new gas-to-liquids consuming water because there are technologies in place at present where you could use gas-to-liquid refineries without using any fresh water. Typical example being the Pearl refinery in Qatar, which is the biggest gas-to-liquids refinery in the country. We then looked at some scenarios in terms of CF2 implementations. We know that if there's no pricing mechanism, there's certain implications in terms of some refinery closures. We wanted to see what happens if those refineries actually close. And key there would be the effect on imports. We actually see imports in terms of refinery closures actually increasing drastically, so our ports cannot actually handle that sort of a situation. So it's one of the scenarios we actually looked at. We also looked at a scenario in terms of low crude. The use of crude oil refineries is very sensitive to the price of crude, and we wanted to see what happens if crude oil actually drops in price. I'm going to skip that. These are the costs in terms of the sensitivity scenarios. In the interest of time, I just want to go on to the stakeholder consultations. In terms of stakeholder consultations, there were some key issues in terms of vehicle penetration, in terms of modular shifts from liquid fuels into electricity vehicle penetrations. So we need to look at that. We also need to highlight why no CO2 caps were placed in the transport sector. It's an issue of implementation. We'd rather have clean fuels and engine efficiencies to cater for that. And there were also issues around indigenous gas in terms of imports and pipe gas. I think that's where I would stop in the interest of time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
morning, Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, and Members of the Public. So,
what are you doing now?
The IRP.
I see. Yeah, we don't have time. Otherwise, I would have liked us to discuss the first slide first. I know what's going to happen when you present the IRP. And then we just focus on the electricity supply and just our one aspect of it, and not liquid fuels, which is becoming a more challenging issue for the future. But I hope one of our members will take us back to this first presentation first. So continue. In the benefit of time, let's continue.
Thank you, Chair. As indicated, I will be presenting on the IRP, the Integrated Resource Plan, which is the electricity part of the, basically of the energy plan. The presentation is focused around what we have presented to the public in the recent stakeholder engagements that we've had between December and now. The purpose of the consultations was to apprise the public on the process and progress regarding the IRP, to share the key assumptions that we had used in the IRP, and solicit input from the general public, to share the preliminary base case, and I highlight here preliminary base case observations from the IRP update, and to also share a list of scenarios that we will be considering for analysis and solicit input with regard to what other additional scenarios we should be considering when we do additional studies. This slide here basically highlights the process that we're following in updating the IRP. I'll try and use the pointer here. The first part of the update process indicates that our starting point is actually the previous approved IRP. Unlike the 2010 IRP where we had no base, the IRP 2010 is an update rather than a zero-based. So the IRP 2016 is an update of the 2010 plan. It's not a zero-based where we actually take the previous plan and we start from scratch. The following the process of updating, there are key planning facts that we need to, or the assumptions that went into the plan that we need to update. And those assumptions include, for example, assumptions like the demand, existing plant performance, technology costs, new commission plants that had actually come online since the previous plan, decommissioned plants, and the determinations that had been issued with regard to the new build plants. Once we have updated those assumptions, we basically trying to develop what we call the base case, which is basically the starting point. And once you have the what we call the credible base case, you can actually run a number of scenarios. And why do you run scenarios? It's because, as indicated earlier in the introduction, long-term planning is not an exact science. You take view around what you think certain assumptions are going to do going forward. And that view can change. And actually, if you talk to different people, there is different views with regard to what the future would look like. And you run scenarios so that you can understand those different views and inform the discussions so that you can decide as a country which you think is the most probable route that will actually materialize. And basically that culminates into what we call the draft balanced IRP, as indicated on the graph here. And the draft balanced IRP obviously also has to take into account other government policies. And out of that draft balanced IRP, we produce what we call the policy adjusted IRP. So in terms of the process, as also indicated during the introduction, our process consists of four stages. The first stage being what we say is settling the assumptions, is basically agreeing what are the reasonable assumptions to put into the base case. The second stage is developing a credible base case, which is basically developing a credible starting point. The third phase is running the various scenarios and coming up with a draft balanced IRP. The fourth stage is which is the final stage, is what we call the final policy adjusted IRP. In terms of what we have taken to the public, we have taken the first and the second milestone, because in planning, it's hardly the final results that are contested. It's actually the assumptions that went into the plan that are highly contested. So if you do studies not having agreed the assumptions that go into the plan, or yes, you're not going to get complete agreement, but reaching some level of consensus in terms of what is the starting base, then the plan is not going to be accepted by most of the people. So the purpose of the consultation process that we went through was to mostly consult on the assumptions to say this is the view, or this is the position, or this is the information we have as government or as the department. Is there any other information we need to be aware of, or is there something that we're missing out, so that when we start doing the analysis, the plans are actually acceptable or are in the right path? But then what we also decided to do as part of the process was to share preliminary results of our milestone number two. And I'm saying preliminary because if you look at the process, you can see there's a loop. We say you're developing a credible base case. But for you to develop a credible base case, it needs to meet certain planning imperatives as indicated in that loop. And if it doesn't meet those, you keep on adjusting your model before you can have a credible base case. And basically, you can't have a credible base case until you have, to some extent, agreed on what are the credible assumptions that goes into that base case. So hence, we're saying what we shared is a preliminary base case based on the assumptions that we had taken as a first start. So out of the consultation process, we will come out with a credible base case that will be used to run the various scenarios. At a high level, that's the process that we're following in terms of the IRP process. What I'll be doing next is just to take you through, at a high level, obviously being conscious of time, into some of the key assumptions and what informed, at a high level, those assumptions, and also share with you the preliminary base case scenario results, as well as the scenarios that we will be testing. What I also have to indicate at this point here is that we started this process around October, September in 2015. So, and before we start with the actual modeling of the IRP, there are a number of experts that we engage in terms of the assumptions. So that process started as early as December 2015 of engaging the various experts, which I'll indicate when I go into the detail report in terms of the assumptions we should be using. So at that point in time, most of the assumptions were actually settled around March 2015. Hence, you will see that there is a reference to the assumptions going back that far. The key assumptions that we will be sharing are as indicated on this table is the demand forecast. The demand forecast, the source of that is actually a forecast that's put together by the CSIR and ESCOM. And we use that, and demand forecast is basically the forecast in terms of the energy assumption for the planning for the future. The economic parameters in the form of discount rate and exchange rate, we use publicly available information from the South African Reserve Bank and the National Treasury. Technology and fuel costs, we use a number of sources. We use the main source is EPRI is a US-based electricity research organization. Why we use EPRI is because they have a large database of various projects. They're basically monitoring various projects across the world, so they've got a large database of technology costs and fuel costs that they are compiling. And what we do, we basically request them to give us a report and try and convert those numbers into the South African numbers. We also use some numbers from ESCOM. Which one specifically from ESCOM? The numbers we use from ESCOM is with regard to our assumptions around imports, specifically import hydro, because they've got a unit internally that's working on these things and they understand the numbers. Some assumptions, we use the assumptions from 2010 and we escalated them. In terms of the IPP renewables, which has been a hot topic, the cost we used at the time the cost coming from the IPP bid window 4 program, And the reason we used Bid Window 4 program, as I indicated, we were actually sitting in September 2015, and that was the publicly available numbers at the time. The other assumptions that we've used, as indicated there, is between ESCOM and NESA, and I'll go into the detail later on, but I thought it's important to indicate the source of the assumptions that we used that we're using in the plan. In terms of the energy demand forecast, as I indicated, the demand forecast is basically compiled by the CSIR. And just here at a high level, what I'm trying to show is that the CSIR compile the forecast looking at five different sectors, which is manufacturing, agriculture, mining, industrial, and commercial. And what they do, using statistics which I'll not go into, they develop, if I may, as an example, indicate here that up to this point here, basically the data you see there is historic. And they use statistics basically to extrapolate or to predict what the various scenarios going into the future are. And as you can see there, they had a number of scenarios in terms of what the possible forecast will do. What we chose for the base case, we chose what we call the high less intense, which is the one I'm pointing here. And then with regard to the same scenarios they had, what they call the low scenario, which we're indicating here because we intend to test this low scenario as a low scenario as a scenario for the IRP. As I indicated, the fact that we chose the high less intense, there may be a different view out there in terms of where it's going. As I indicated, it's not exact science. You have to test the robustness of the plan. What we're indicating with the red line that is short there, it's actually the forecast that was in the 2010 IRP. You know, because there's also been debate to say, are we taking into account the fact that demand projections is less than what it was in 2010, and hence we included the graph there to show that our current demand forecast does take that into account. In terms of the economic parameters, as I indicated, when we started, most of the assumptions were sitting at January 2015. We were using the foreign dollar exchange, we used 1155. When we started consultations in December, there was an outcry because I think the rand dollar exchange at the time was just sitting just over 14. We're currently sitting around 13, and it shows you that these numbers change daily. So in planning, you have to pick a position, peg, do your studies, and at the time you finalize them, update them with the most recent numbers. If you're going to change them every day, it means your plan will never get finalized because these numbers change as you go along. We use the social discount rate of 8.2%. The cost of unsafe energy, which is basically the cost to the economy if the energy is not served, is estimated at 77.30, and this is a NESA study that was done a while back. There's also issues that have been raised around this number, and NESA is currently revising the study, so as soon as the latest numbers become available, they will be taken into consideration. In terms of technology cost, technology overnight cost, as indicated, the overnight cost is the cost of construction project if no interest was incurred during construction, as if the project was completed overnight. And those are the various numbers for the various technologies. These numbers are as indicated in the April report, which I indicated that they track the numbers of projects worldwide, and they provide us with the report. Fuel costs, these are the numbers we had assumed with regard to coal. Coal pulverized with FGD, we had assumed 450 rands per ton. And for specifically, I think the one that I must bring your attention to is around gas. You will know that at the present moment we don't have gas in the country. And we had assumed here, based on the numbers that we had seen, we had assumed about $10 per gigajoule. Again, this number is a number that assumes that you have the infrastructure. When you start this number, might start a program in the country, this number might be slightly different because you may not have the volume, you know, to actually dilute the infrastructure cost. So hence we say you make an assumption and you test its robustness in the plan. It's not about absolutes. We also have what you call technology learning rates. What are learning rates? Learning rates can be defined as a fractional reduction in cost for each doubling of cumulative production or capacity of a new technology over a period of time. So basically what you're saying is that over time, as technology matures, as technology becomes more prominent in terms of use, the costs will go down because you start benefiting from the economies of scale as well. And specifically with regard to renewables, there were learning rates which were assumed in the 2010 IRP. And one of the issues that's contested around the learning rate is that we have adjusted the learning rate specifically around PV and when we did the study, and it's because what we were arguing at the time was to say the cost of renewables have actually fallen quicker than we had anticipated. So if you don't take that into account in the learning rates, you don't adjust for that, you're actually going to drop them even more, you know, significantly. And I think the debate then becomes, will, you know, the industry be willing to? Because if you think about it, the plan looks at least cost. You know, it assumes the price at that point in time. There were other assumptions, which is the biggest assumption, and my colleague, I think he touched on it when he was presenting on the liquid fuel. There is what we call CO2 emissions reduction trajectory, and basically this is the CO2 emission constraints which were placed on the IRP in 2010. Basically, you were capping the emissions over a period of time in the endeavor to reduce CO2 emissions in the energy sector, as is regarded as one of the most contributing sectors. And what at the time we had used in the 2010 update was in the 2010 IRP, we had used the moderate decline trajectory, which we are using in the IRP update base case. But you will see when we discuss scenarios that Department of Environmental Affairs actually last year came back to us during consultation with them to say, we think you should actually consider using carbon budget. And the difference between this and carbon budget is that with carbon budget, they give you a periodic number. They basically tell you that this is the reduction, you should achieve this reduction by 2030. You should achieve this reduction by 2050. How you get there is irrelevant. Compared to this one, you can see you get a ceiling. So on an annual basis, you cannot exceed the ceiling. With the other plan, it doesn't matter. You can exceed so long as cumulatively at the end of the period, you would have achieved, you know, the budget that had been put out there. In terms of what I consider to be other considerations, you will understand that for each technology, technologies are different and there are considerations that apply to different technologies. In 2010, because we didn't know much about renewables, we placed what we call annual build limit on renewables. Basically, at the time in 2010, we said we assume that you will not be able to do 1,000 megawatts of PV per annum, more than 1,000 megawatts. Just to put it into context, most of the plants that are out there, it's about 75 megawatts. So if you round them to 100, this is like you had argued at the time, the assumption was that you won't be able to do more than 10 plants, you know, per annum, you know, at different sites. Similarly, the same constraint, similar constraint was put to wind, which was 1,800 megawatts. We have maintained those, what are called considerations. I don't want to use the word constraint because it tends to have different meanings, but it's considerations in terms of the various technologies. We had maintained for renewables, we maintain the 2010 considerations. Just to give example, if I jump quickly to coal, for coal specifically, we know that, I mean, in terms of even the information that we got from the experts is that for a single unit coal-fired power plant, there's a lead time of about 4 years. So those are the considerations that we put into the model, because it doesn't make sense to put into the model when you model and assume that you can build a coal-fired power plant tomorrow when you know that there's a lead time of 4 years. So basically, you're starting with a plan that's not realistic. And if you remember, we're saying our base case must be a credible base case. It must be a base case that's basically realistic. And there are consideration for the various technologies as indicated there, as indicated on this table, which I'll not go into the detail. One thing that was highlighted to us is that, for example, we had not put any consideration on, which was an oversight from our side, we had not put any consideration on gas, or we had not, you know, applied any consideration on gas, which has been highlighted as a shortcoming, which we'll be making sure that we update in the plan that we'll be doing. Other assumptions, if I may run quickly through them, Chair. This one I think it's important to put out here because it's around the Eskom plant performance. We know when we had load shedding, it had to do with how the Eskom plants or the Eskom plant availability. We, in the model that we do, we have to take a position in terms of what we assume the Eskom plant performance will be doing going forward. We got this information, we engaged Eskom, and they came back to us and they said, look, we looked at three scenarios that we came up with. The bottom one basically being, this is where they were at the time, and they said, if we things continue the way they are and we statistically extrapolate, where do we think we, I apologize, I'm just trying to use the pointer, where we will be, which is the bottom curve. And then they also took other views. They said, we have done a number of things, or we plan to do a number of things, and we think if those things materialize, the plant performance will improve, you know. And they talk about it might, if they achieve everything that they said to do, they will see a high plant performance. If they don't achieve everything but they're still in control, they will achieve the moderate plant performance. What did we do? Because we, for the base case, we used the moderate. Why did we use the moderate? Is because that's what Eskom has been compacted to. But what we will do as part of the scenarios, which I'll indicate later, we will be running the low plant performance as a scenario to say, is our plan robust enough, or what will happen to our plan if the Eskom plant performance does not improve? The other consideration that we put in the plans is how the various Eskom coal fleet is going to go offline. In blue, the blue represent the various units as they come out. If I may just take Roadflay, basically as per this plan, which is the plan that was filed with the Department of Environmental Affairs when Eskom was filing their plan for complying with air quality, they indicated, for example, that Roadflay will start going offline from 2025 and there won't be Roadflay by 2030. As an example. So these are the considerations that are in the plan. So the plan takes into account the fact that plants will be retired, assuming a plant life of 50 years. We also take into account what we call the non-ESCOM plants. These are the Kelvins in the East Rand, in Gauteng, the Sasol plants, and other plants that we are aware of. And the reason we take these plants into consideration is because we look at demand as one total demand in the country. So if these plants are not available or they get retired, they have to be serviced. The load has to be serviced in some way. Then at the time when we did the plan, we also got dates from Eskom with regard to what their various bill programs will, how will they be coming online in terms of Medupi, Kusile, and Ingula. And these are the dates. As I indicated that this information is slightly outdated. We know that Ingula Eskom has reported that it's all been completed, but it does not change the results of the planning because this is long-term planning. So in the planning, it would have come online anyway. It's just that it's come online earlier than we had envisaged or they had indicated. The other consideration, which I think I need to take some time and explain that we take into account, has to do with ministerial determinations, which are the determinations that are issued by the department with regard to building of new plants. We had to take a position in terms of the base case. And what we did in the base case, we said everything, the assumption we've made was that everything that has been procured, and procured meaning everything where there has been a request for proposals, we will consider as a given. in our plan. We'll consider to be connected. We'll put it in the plan. This does not mean that we're making a decision, but this is just for technical consideration, for modeling, because it's important, I mean, to take these things into account. So we had assumed that everything that has been procured up to the 900 megawatt of coal is in the plan. All other determinations, we had actually, by the way, just said we will do the plan, let the plan optimize, and then at a policy adjustment phase, then if those determinations will actually be discussed at that point in time. And this, I mean, all determinations, I mean, determinations for renewables, determinations for coal, nuclear, that have not been procured. That's how we treated them. So we treated them equally. But it was not a decision. It was a technical consideration for the model. Again, it's an assumption, and there's been inputs from various people in terms of how we should be doing dealing with this differently. And that's why we went out on a public consultation. Demand-side management, we used what ESCOM had envisaged, and what we did with regard to that, we will be, I'll show later in the scenarios, we'll be running a scenario that assumes higher demand-side management projections. At this point in time, then, I'll go into, this is the end of the key assumptions that I wanted just to highlight. And then we took these assumptions, we put them in the model, and then we said to the model, based on these assumptions and just least cost, nothing else, no other consideration, what would the plan look like? And basically what we saw is what you are seeing on this table, but I'll quickly just jump on this table and perhaps go to this slide here because it summarizes what we see in there. What we are saying is that with all those considerations and assumptions that we had indicated, the system commissions new capacity as early as 2022. Obviously, initial capacity comes from a combination of PV, wind, and gas because it assumes that to be the cheapest combination. But again, as I indicated, remember, we took a position on the price of gas. If the price of gas changes, it's not what we had indicated. This picture will change completely, and that's why you run scenarios. Then we also note that with regard to traditional base load, the system commissions base load between 2028 and 2040 from the various technologies. What we also note with regard to the energy mix is that gas and renewables form the biggest chunk of installed capacity, but this is because we made certain assumptions. Whether those assumptions are wrong or right, obviously, hence we went out on consultation. There's a significant reduction in installed capacity from coal, but while installed capacity from coal has reduced significantly, coal and nuclear, in terms of the preliminary base case, contribute the most to the volume of the energy, which is basically the megawatt hours. You know, even though the base is low because it's base load, the contribution is high. At a high level, as I indicated, what I've just shared here is a preliminary base case. Once we have settled on the assumptions, we've taken into account all the inputs we've been getting from the various public participation processes, the base case will probably look different to what we had indicated here. By the way, just to give Phil, but maybe, I mean, we have received, so far we had processed about 63 presentations, and this is even before the closing date of 31st March, you know, and we still continue to receive written comments in terms of the various assumptions that we've taken. So the assumptions will obviously change. I'll skip these slides. These slides were just to show the various levelized costs. Going straight into the scenarios, Chair, the various scenarios we'll be testing, if I may quickly just go down the list. I indicated earlier that the base case assumes the carbon ceiling, you know, reduction over a period of time. We'll be testing the carbon budget as an instrument to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as advised by the Department of Environmental Affairs. So we'll be running that as a scenario. Primary fuel future price sensitivity. This talks to the price of gas that I had indicated. By the way, it also talks to the price of coal because at the present moment, I mean, depending on how you buy your coal, if, you know, if you go on long-term contracts, like with Eskom does, compared to if you go into the spot market, completely different prices. So what you assume in the plan would obviously have an impact in terms of the cost of energy. Low demand trajectory, we acknowledge that the fact that we chose a certain trajectory for demand, it's not an exact science. A different trajectory might materialize, so we need to test the robustness of the plans. Embedded generation, since the advent of load shedding, there's a lot of people who have gone into doing their own generation, and that generation is competing for the same demand. So you don't want to build white elephants. So we will run a scenario that looks at if a certain volume of the demand is actually served through embedded generation or own generation, what happens on the supply side in terms of our plans at an aggregate level. And hence energy efficiency, what happens if we pursue the projections as they sit in the energy efficiency strategy, how does that impact on the supply side? Low Eskom plant performance, that touched on that. Regional options, during introduction, I think that was mentioned. We don't exist in isolation. We exist in, obviously, a region where the region is a resource to us in terms of supply, but the region also presents an opportunity in terms of us supplying energy to the region. So we'll test that scenario. The most popular one, the so-called unconstrained renewables, we will test a scenario where we're saying, if you assume you can do 10,000 gigawatts of wind per annum, what does the plan look like? You know, so basically, that's the, we will test the unconstrained renewable as a scenario. New technologies, if you do a pure least cost analysis, new technologies don't come in because new technologies are generally expensive. You know, so you have to obviously find a scenario where you pick certain technologies. And here we give an example of storage, you know, to say if you assume storage becomes part of the mix, how does it impact on the plan? And this is not the only technology, by the way. We're just using storage as an example. Electricity network implications. We know as we sit today that as part of the program that we run, the IPP program, there are good projects that did not make the cut, not because they were not good with price or whatever, but because there was no transmission capacity where they wanted to come in. So these are considerations that we have to think about, you know, when we talk about these things. And that's why when we raise the issue of network constraints, we refer to that, to the fact that we know that there are projects that didn't make it, not because we're saying there are, you know, and we believe that if we take this into consideration and we plan proper, we will be able to make sure that we maximize a bigger or greater system cost. We will also run other additional sensitivities to make sure that the plan is basically robust enough. In conclusion, Chair, in terms of just at the high level, we've had 9 public workshops in 9 provinces during December, January, and February. Total number of presentations we received from the various public forums was about 63.
We can see that. Yeah. Move to scenarios.
We've done the scenarios, Chair.
Have you done the scenarios?
Yes, it was. It's the scenarios that we will be considering. This is the list that I was going through.
No. Okay. I want you to conclude.
Yes, Chair.
We're going back to the scenarios in the IEP.
Get
a check. I thought you were going to the scenarios in the IEP.
No, Chair, the difference is the IEP, they had already ran the scenarios. What we're saying here is that once we settle the assumptions...
Or liquid fuels.
I'm not understanding, Chair. Okay, Chair. I'm done. I'm done in terms of my presentation.
Yeah.
I'm done, and then we can go back.
Okay. Can we, I'm sure we can take questions. Mr. Maybe I got lost. Mr. Pani, when we present in the IEP, you stopped, you looked at the Dukut Wells scenarios in the IEP document and stopped at, and not looked at the electricity supply scenarios in the IEP. But did he cover that? That's actually because you stopped there. So that's what I thought, we went back to the main document, so to speak, to deal with those scenarios. Yeah, can I do that quickly?
Chair, obviously Mr. Pani can also come in. What we had said was that the electricity scenarios in the IEP were based on the 2010 IRP as an input. And because we're revising the IRP, that's what we're sharing here now. And I think Mr. Pani can perhaps maybe comment further.
No, Chair, you're correct. So what happened in the umbrella presentation is that we stopped at that point where we say the electricity scenarios. And Chair, maybe we also needed to indicate that we have also not paid attention enough to the gas section. So that's still work in process, just so that the picture is complete. So what you would have seen would have been the electricity detail and the liquid fuels detail. But in terms of the other component, we haven't gone there. So the idea is that where it says electricity scenarios, it becomes this presentation on the IRP chain, and then it stops there.
So these are big documents. I wish we had the time. And I know what you're saying when you say scenario planning, policy planning is no exact science, right? But I wish we had time just to look at the assumptions we're making first, and then to look at where we are first. Now, the current situation in Katwa, energy installed capacity, where we are, current, and so what's the demand, the projected demand, and what are the assumptions informing that? So when we have done that, I want us to talk about what's happening in reality, what you call the actual things we're doing to get there. Because we can write these things into policy, but the reality is not always doesn't correlate with what is contained in policy. So, just the things we're doing now. So, but I'm sure it'll come there. For instance, you see what you're saying here about nuclear, right? And I heard you explaining something, because this is what has been confusing people in public. What are you saying? 2037, and ESCOM says a request for information, so they're proceeding on the basis of 2010, and then you say in 2037, what's happening in regard to the IEP, and what we're doing in practice? You see that? And I wish, because that's good for your purposes, this is quite useful, and the kind of detail that's here. But from where I'm sitting, I want to see the big things, and whether we are capable, whether in practice we have the capacity to meet the things we say we do, we will do, or we plan. Okay. All right. Questions? Makai, Matala, Mhambisala, Estazen, Honorable Makai.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the first question is directed to you. Just for members' sake, could you just explain the legislative process to follow from here on out? I know DDG Opane spoke about the four milestones, but I was concerned to understand when the revised plan would come back to committee for input, and also just in terms of the broad policy, how it would be adopted through the House. So if you just clarify for us that process, please, because it seems that this is our only input as a committee, and considering this document was launched in November, we're only seeing it in February, all submissions, written submissions must be submitted by the end of March. It seems that the oversight role of Parliament and this committee specifically is being somewhat bypassed. So if we could just clarify the legislative process for members, please. Chair, I must say this is a much better version of the report than was offered to the public at the beginning of the consultation process. You can already see that there's been a significant adjustment to some of the feedback that has been provided. I'm very pleased to see that a base case scenario will be run for renewables in an unconstrained scenario. So I think that's a positive development in the work. I think the department has also given us a lot of insight into some of the amendments that they will make to the plan. But Chair, I'm a bit concerned we didn't spend enough time on the demand side for electricity. You will have noted last week in the business press, Eskom was reported to be signing 20-year deals for reduced electricity provision to large smelters, potentially in Saldanha, which again seems to suggest that Eskom has an oversupply of electricity if it can now sign 20-year agreements of electricity at a lower cost, which then brings us back to their assumptions on supply, which then brings us back to, or on demand, which then brings us back to this whole assumption of why do we need nuclear and why is an RFI being issued now? And also the clarity around who sets energy policy in the country. Does the Department of Energy set energy policy with these two documents, which we do understand and where it flows from the Energy Act, I mean, the white paper of 1998, or does Eskom decide now independently that it will pursue elements of the energy mix which it preferences over other areas of the energy mix? So could we have some certainty that once these documents are accepted and promulgated, that Eskom will adhere to what is set out in the IRP and the IEP, which clearly makes a case that for a delay in nuclear procurement. Chair, there's also a lot of assumptions being made around the addition of additional refineries and when they will come online and how. We know, Chair, that this committee hasn't spent enough time on petrochemicals. We've been very concerned with nuclear and electricity. But the assumptions that these refineries will pop out of where? Who's going to fund them? Who's going to build them? There's no appetite at all from the private sector to renew or to build refineries at present, and we know that there are various issues and reasons for this. So it seems a bit foolhardy that we're making assumptions that these refineries will come online when when the market conditions within South Africa don't seem to exist to encourage private investment in refineries. So, you know, it's one thing assuming that they'll come online. It's another thing, the economics just don't seem workable around it, so which makes the plan seem a bit unrealistic. And then, Chair, I just wanted to follow up on two other things. Chair, one of the stakeholder engagements that we did attend seemed to have an issue that there were certain forms of technology excluded from the plan, specifically the concentrated solar power and cogeneration. And I haven't heard anything today which explains why they were excluded. Chair, one of the major concerns that has come out from most of the media in this period is that there's been an inconsistency around pricing of the various technologies, so you're not really comparing apples with apples. I think the department has gone some way today to try and explain its sourcing of information, and I'm just wanting to hear if they feel that they've now dealt with this inconsistency in cost, because obviously the low-cost assumptions, we're looking for a low-cost model, so the assumptions of pricing are really, really important, specifically since certain types of assumptions for different types of technologies vary. So an overnight cost for nuclear might not be the best form of assumption to determine the cost of nuclear vis-a-vis other forms of technology, which again might give us a false assumption within the scenario. Chair, and then the big elephant in the room is obviously what's happening with the ISMO bill, all of the work that's coming out of introduction of renewables and the energy mix and going forward, again, speaks to a need for regulation within the sector, and whether this committee or the ministry has any intention of revisiting some form of ISMO, which is becoming increasingly important considering the scope and size of renewables within our energy mix. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Mine, it is with regard to the public consultation process that commenced in December. And I'm afraid, Chair, during that time, people were on holidays. And I'm afraid if this thing was done exactly during that time, the process is not well done. Because where I'm staying, Chair, I haven't seen any other processes regarding to this consultation with regard to the issues raised by the officials. Because in my view, I thought the process, maybe it will take place during this time of the year, unless otherwise there are other things. But during December, Chair, that process hasn't been done very well. Because in my view, I thought this process maybe it will be done through local municipalities or through SALCA representing the local municipalities, unless otherwise this process was done in metros, because a number of people went to, if they go for holidays, they'll go to Johannesburg, Gauteng province, and some other provinces where there are metros, Port Elizabeth. Maybe that process was done while people are there in holiday in Port Elizabeth, because there is a sea there. Maybe this process was done with those people who were on holiday, and those who are staying in the rural provinces where I come from, like Limpopo, things like that was never, I haven't seen that thing. A village called Tsingitsingi in my province. I don't know as to whether this process was done in that village called Tsingitsingi. It's somewhere in Tsanene. The local municipality is Tsanene local municipality. Unless otherwise it was done through SALCA. I'm not sure, but I want to clarify with regard to that, Chair. The other thing, Chair, relates to one of the officials spoke about IPRI, I'm told, the report is that is a U.S.-based data firm or a company. I wanted to check with officials as to whether when they're getting data from these imperialist countries, do they pay for them to get data? And if they pay, how much was paid to that company based in USA? If it was paid, And is this thing budgeted for when you are looking to get data? Because there were reasons given that it's a company that is more than any other company in the world that has got the data, the world data. So I doubt as to whether if you paid for that company, how much was paid? And if you paid, how much was budgeted for in the department? The other one, Chair, which is very interesting, relates to, I'm told by 2030, your petrol SA is going to be dry. Is there any plan in place to rescue petrol SA not to go dry because it's our own company? Can I get some indications from the officials? Is there any other plan to rescue that petrol SA? The other one, Chair, which is very interesting, one of the officials spoke about the new and the old cars that consume more energy. The old one does not consume more energy because some of us who are no longer using them, who are buying new cars, vis-a-vis the new cars are the ones that are consuming more energy than the old cars. I didn't get it very clearly, Honorable Chair. If I might be clarified, I'll be very happy. And I think I'm not speaking on behalf of my committee. This is my view and the things that is very seriously on my. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've been imitated here, but you are not assisting. The Deputy Minister and the members of the committee are intimidating me, Chair. You must make sure that you protect me. I'm watching you, Chair.
They are looking at you.
They are looking at me. As I'm speaking, I'm getting intimidated. But anyway, Chair, it's fine.
They are paying attention.
They are paying attention to me. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Tala. Honourable Mohamed Sal.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the elder partly covered me on one of the questions which I wanted to raise. However, I want to reiterate. The presentation on variables analysis or analyzed. This issue of PetroSA came out. I'm sitting here looking at the objectives which are presented by the department to the committee today. And amongst the objectives, there's this one objective which says that they must ensure security of supply. Now, here is a state-owned entity and a national key point presentation to us that it's running out of gas, or at some point it will run out of gas. Now, the Department of Energy is responsible for all these entities over and above their responsibility and the primary tasks. Now, my question, Chair, is that are there any measures in place to ensure that PetroSA doesn't run out of gas? Is there any plan that the department has in terms of expanding the capacity of the existing refineries, particularly PetroSA? Or are you suggesting that you are phasing out the existing refineries generally? Because the report on PetroSA begins to say you are awaiting a shutdown, and that can never be accepted. Chair, the presentation on the IRIP, does not present enough sources of energy, particularly around the biomass. Mr. Apane would recall that I've raised this last year when he did the presentation all by himself and no one from the department came to assist him or accompany him. It was a tragedy. When you are citing biomass as the only source, for me it's not enough. There are various and different kinds of biomass which you clearly overlooked this time around again. I have mentioned a few that time, and I want to reiterate that agriculture and paper milling and municipal reuse can be great contributors in addition to biogas. Now, you are sitting here presenting to us that there's not enough feedstock in the country. And you would know through your research, which you said you were undertaking, Mr. Apane, that biomass can in fact play a role as a feedstock for cogeneration and in provision of electricity close to the source. Why are you overlooking this? And you come here and complain that you don't have feedstock and so on and so forth when there are sources to generate feedstock. On the IEP, your scenarios or the presentation there, whilst your international agency for energy predicts a decline in use of coal as a source of energy by 2040, the scenarios presented shows increase way beyond the new build comes online, like your Kusile power plants, etc. Now, what's the reason for this? I need to be cleared because, you know, knowledge is power. So I need a clarity on that and try and be elaborative so that we have an understanding of how these things happen. We don't want to end like Save South Africa, who spoke on nuclear build program, which they know nothing about, and all it was rhetoric. We want to be empowered. One last issue, Chair, which I want to raise, is what was raised during the consultations on the lack of consistency between the two policies. Now, I want you to empower us on the relationship between the RIP and IP. Clarify that so that we are cleared as we move forward. Because in the public consultations, the lack of consistency between these two policies was cited, and the issue was, for instance, the distribution and transmission, which is not covered in the IRIP, despite the recommendations in the IEP. Now, are there reasons for that? If so, what are the reasons for such inconsistencies, which are unclear? So, thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Honorable, please.
Thank you, Chair. This has been long-awaited and very good, acceptable, but a lack of coherence and policy uncertainty are major factors in this country's failure to industrialize at an acceptable rate. We have, the last speaker spoke about the technology learning and cost of renewables falling faster. And government has frequently cited South Africa's renewable energy program as a shining example of how well industrialization is working, and rightly so. It was drawing more than 200 million rand. I just heard another 500 million rand was promised or saw yesterday, investments alone. Then last year, you know, although it was also on the previous IEC, And IRP committed for renewable energies, the then CEO, Mr. Brian Molefa, just announced this utility would now sign no further agreements to purchase renewable energy from independent power producers. This is all self-inflicted wounds, like I just said. In 2000, the last speaker also said in 2010 we didn't know much about renewable energy, but the cost was falling so much. We are now, policy uncertainty is really a big concern in this country. We are now creating gas industrialization programs without policy certainty and without policy program alignment. Policy alignment has to be secured in order to connect the producers to the grid or to the system. We, if I can just page through this. I've made notes on certain pages. The Eskom committed bold dates. Our speaker also said he apologized for the mistake here for on Ngula. It came online earlier than anticipated. You don't have to have any fears with Medupi and Kusili, I'm sure, in that regard. Only about 4 years behind that. Then I have to agree with my very capable colleague next to me here. The public workshop in the 9 provinces, you definitely wanted industrial participation as well. And I don't know if the Times was purposely selected for that, or because industrial participation couldn't have happened during that time. And it was also, you say, during December, January and February. It was not February. You said, yeah, in this, it was until the 3rd or the 5th of February. So it was not February as well. That's a thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Steven. Yeah, let's... Can we have responses? I just want to add one question, just from my purpose is just to have clarity the in relation to process. One member called, what's the legislative process? That question. I'm sure we can determine that ourselves. Within the time frames that you're working on. I want to see at what point do you want to have a final document, final for consideration by cabinet. So that we're clear that just before that happens, we can have a discussion on the document once again, so that we can make some final input, because now we're dealing with a moving target. So when we have a discussion about this assumption, we say, yeah, it's still it might change, so it would be better towards the end of the process that the committee can once again engage with what is almost the final document. So if we can clarify that. Secretary, we had in the past, just to deal with the issue of the liquid fuels, we had intended that we'll have a workshop. So perhaps that we need that in preparation for our contribution to the policy document before its finalization. Okay, I think we can respond to the questions and the important question about the relationship between the two documents. I must say, you can't leave. I know we're coming back to this issue, but we can't leave here without clarifying this thing in my mind. And I know we're saying this is a policy document, this is a process of policy planning, but how does this inform practice? And the issue is, this thing about nuclear, what do you think about nuclear here? First commission in 2037, but at the moment, we have asked for information on the basis of the 2010. What's happening? Can somebody clarify? Is this just an economic exercise, or what's happening? Because that thing does cause confusion about, are we proceeding on the basis of the IRP 2010, or would that be superseded by what is contained in the IEP? So we will still return. We're going to have another discussion on that matter. But before you leave here, can you please clarify that? Because there's been some
public discussion about that. I can't understand what's happening myself on that. Okay. Responses, who's going to start? Or Deputy Minister would come last? Who's first?
Maybe let me just deal with the issue around the policy certainty, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. As it stands, the energy mix remains the policy that is being applicable. And the certainty around that is that that's an energy mix policy that is being used. And we've got different entities that have certain responsibilities, but all of that is derived from the mandate of the policy mandate as enshrined there. It's going to be the same arrangement when this exercise is completed, that this will form the high-level policy guide for all the work that gets done. For now, that's a policy that is being applicable as we speak. So in terms of the policy entity of government at the moment, that's where the mandate is derived or should be derived.
Okay. I like should be. Mr. Pan?
Thanks, Chair. If I can deal with the questions that relate to the exclusions of the technologies, I thought we could be clearer just in terms of the, because this question has arisen in relation to CSP cogen on the one hand, but also biomass and biogas. And Honorable Mohamed Khala, we have taken your thing into consideration. In fact, tomorrow we're hosting a full day workshop on the biomass. But I think what is not clear in that is that within the renewable thing, and I think you do have a slide that can show the consideration around biomass / biogas. So it's just not come out because it tends to be what we call sub-utility. It tends to be smaller. So the small-scale stuff is not coming out as much because it's not 100 or 1,000 megawatts, and I think we can perhaps beef that up and just lift it up. But it certainly is included in the supply options, both biomass and by, you look like you can add.
No, I just wanted to add on that point to say all technologies are in the model. So basically, no technology has been excluded. I think that's an important point to make. What you are seeing is that depending on the price you place and the assumptions you make about those technologies, some technologies will come up, some of them won't. So it's not because the model does not consider the others. But I think what's also important is that my colleague earlier showed about 8 objectives, you know, with regard to the process. And that's why we talk about the stages, because when you do scenarios, you start fiddling with the prices of other technologies because you had assumed other prices for fuel. Other technologies starts coming up. And hence I said a base case is one scenario. The other scenarios change these things. And what we had shown on the table, and we had clarified this, by the way, with the CSP people as well, Sastella, was that it's not because we excluded CSP. It's because we had, based on the prices we had assumed a certain price for CSP. And they had actually said to us, we think this is the price for CSP. And we said to them, it's fine. We used what is currently available. So give us the source and the supporting information so that it's publicly available, you know, as part of the assumptions. You know, you just don't give us the numbers that you feel like it's a number that's going to make CSP come up. So they have promised to do that. And we're hoping that once that is clarified, these things will come in. But there's also a point on the wheel about energy mix. You know, as I indicated, this is a preliminary base case. At policy adjustment, you have to look at that wheel and say, have you or have we actually achieved all the 8 objectives? And when you get to that point, you'll find that you'll probably end up with a different plan, you know, from where you started as the base case. And then maybe the other point that I should address was I think the point around biomass was probably mentioned with regard to considerations on the slide on page 14. What I had indicated about considerations was that you look at certain considerations with regard to various technologies. And this is the assumption that we had made. And we take the point that's made. We'll go and relook at the assumption around bagasse. But what we had not done was not to exclude it, but we had said we are assuming that within the study period, we have enough fuel to actually support 2,500 megawatts. So it's not that it was excluded, it's because we had put some considerations around it. So I think that's the point I just wanted to make around it.
Through you, Chair, if I can maybe just deal with the other issue. I think you have dealt with the technologies, but just to also reassure, I think in respect of CSP and cogen, it goes further because we are already running programs on CSP and cogen. We've already procured programs under cogen, biomass, and CSP. So it's not, you know, like they are being undermined. I think the point is it's not, I think people want to see 50 gigawatts in the base case and then they become more comfortable. Yet we say this is only, the first step and let's go through the other milestones, including policy adjustment, and then we can take it from there. The question that I wanted to, sorry, there was a question around, and we have apologized.
Is it on this?
Oh, sorry, on the same point. Sorry, dear.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe what would help, at least I think for me it would also help, is that we have focused a lot in terms of looking at technologies and then looking at cost per unit. We have not looked at efficiencies. We have not looked at reliability. And therefore, we are actually comparing pears with bananas. And I think that's where part of the problem comes up, because you might be able to say, this is what we've installed in that wind farm, and it's 100 megawatts. But what's available versus a coal plant versus biogas and all that. And that, I think, is where part of the problem comes up, because when you then look at the CSP, for instance, the only one that I think we have in the country, which is the Aqua one, which is having problems with Eskom, it's the only one that has storage capacity. That is taking the cost up, but the reliability factor goes up exponentially. So I think part of the modeling needs to take those kind of things into consideration. Otherwise, we'll keep on saying 2,000 megawatts, and we know that at a peak, at any given time, with solar, you won't have over 300 megawatts. So I have difficulty as well in terms of making the comparison so that we understand as we make comparisons. And I think that is where the modeling would assist us, so that we understand what are all the different elements we are taking into account. We've spoken about the water use and how it will come down and why it will come down. If we're going to be using coal in the future, what technologies are we using? What are the implications on water? So, Chairperson, I think part of the problem is we come into this meeting with very little time and we skim over things. We don't get into some of those details, obviously, because we don't have time. But I think we miss out some critical elements in that process. Thank you.
Yeah, true. True, time is our difficulty. You won't have many friends, dear. Mr. Apani.
Thanks, sir. If I can deal with the question around the December consultations and the timing at thereof, Chair. I thought last year one of the biggest criticisms we received was exactly that we started, it was definitely before Builders Holiday, and the first week of December we regarded as being a working week, but I think people had the sense that we wanted to sneak some information through, and we took the criticism on the chin. But then, Chair, we cured that, because what then happened, in fact, was that during December it was a lot more information sharing, because people had not related to the document. It was more like, what is an IRP? What are those kinds? It was not to say we will then finish the consultation process. It was actually extended into the next month, into the next year, such that it's closing by the 31st of March. But, you know, for us, it's also a very difficult situation because on the one hand, we have to face questions from the chairman to say, when do you think you're going to take this to cabinet? You know, so time is of, the essence for us in terms of getting through the processes, and sometimes I think we might be pushing it, you know, harder than what we should. But we took the criticism and we tried to correct it. There certainly wasn't any intention to try and, you know, enforce things when people were on holiday. Just in terms of Tzaneen and why we never featured in Tzaneen, Chair, what we do is we mention the issue around the road shows. There is a platform called the Energy Forums, and each of the provinces convenes all the municipalities within their province in order to share, you know, matters that relate to electricity and so on. What is impossible for us, Chair, unfortunately, is that we cannot cover every corner in the country, and we always struggle to cover as much as what we can, and we might want to take some advice as to how do we improve, particularly as it relates to matters of covering not the metros and these places where there's internet and so on. But we get criticized every time about, you know, how do we expand the engagement process to cover those areas. So there was certainly no sinister intention on our part on both of those. Then, Chair, just the issue around policy, I think DG did allude to it. We have also picked up that there might be some policy inconsistencies, particularly between the IRP and the IEP, and my colleague Jacob has covered some of them. For example, when we discount in the IRP, we discount the same way in the IEP and vice versa. We've used an exchange rate in the IEP, which exchange rate would have been different in the April report, because the exchange rate from 2015 January would have been different to the exchange rate that was used at a different time. And those kind of inconsistencies, and I'm calling them policy inconsistencies, but they're technical in nature. We will fix that. Talking about pre-honorable Matlala is that one of the dilemmas we face is that, as my colleague has indicated, you have to use information about technology costs, and that information does not exist. In this country, one of the biggest problems we have is there's a huge, huge paucity of energy information. We don't have it. You know, and because this is a problem we have to make, where do we get the information? In one instance, in 2009, the criticism was that we were reliant too much on Eskom, and Eskom was not independent in that kind of sense. So we have then, if you look at that, we've broadened that. For renewables, we use South African information about costs. We use, you know, the renewable IPP program to determine the cost. But, you know, we don't know what the costs of various gas projects, what the costs of nuclear, what the costs of, I mean, Honorable Hametlala, biomass. We don't know those things because it's still new. So you want to be able to use numbers that, you know, critics or those that are going to critique the plan would be able to, you know, to place reliance as to their accuracy, if I can put it that way. So that's a gap that we have data collection section within the planning function, and one of the things we're doing is to make sure that South Africans we collect energy statistics that gives us the ability to proper planning as a country. Then there was, if we can maybe just deal with the questions around the refineries and that. I thought there was a bit, so where we are right now. Maybe starting with Petro SA and then refineries and then Petro SA, is that we're saying the plan is showing us certain things. That's where we are. Now, Chair, to your question also is now, in the practical sense, what are the implications and what are we doing in order to give effect to that which we need to do, you know, to influence the flag? So we are saying, we are confirming that, in fact, we can see that the refineries are going to come to end of life. What are the choices that we're facing? We're not at the point where we're saying the choices are then the following and the other. We're saying, let's now test them. We call them scenarios. Let's test if we build a new, he referred to it as CF2, a clean fuels refinery. If we were to build that, what would it likely cost? If we look at the aggregate problem that we face in the liquid fuel space, I think the number that you used there was about 2.5 trillion rands by 2050. Then the next questions would be, what do we need to do in order to crowd in the necessary programs, the investments to do that? You know, so that, I suppose that would be the next part of this. So we're saying at this point, here is a plan, and once it's been adopted, then let's implement, you know, the plan. And then all of these questions, regulatory certainty, you know, regulatory models, you know, how do we finance them and so on, all of those things, who pays for them, will follow. It certainly is not a process that follows. It can be run in series because we can already see that Petro-SA, or not Mohammed Lala, Petro-SA has a problem and we need to intervene. And in fact, I thought the question was going to be, it's actually not 2030. 2030 is a scenario. It's happening sooner, much, much sooner than 2030. Therefore, the question is, how do we intervene to find a feedstock? But the nice thing about it is it's showing that there are certain infrastructure programs which are, if you like, no regret investments that we can make, and they will then help to be able to address not only Petro-SA, but that. In the National Development Plan, one of the things that we charged with is to make a decision around a refinery, and it said by 2016 we must make a decision. And this modeling has now given us the answer, because we can see in relative terms, do we build a new refinery? In other words, do we build, let's call it Project Mtombo? Do we build Project Mtombo, or do we try and extend the life of the lives of the existing, you know, refineries, or do we import more and not build our own refinery? And what are the costs and benefits of the various scenarios? That is what we've modeled now. We're able to have the evidence that shows that this is what we can do, and the implications are the following. We're not there yet where we're saying, let's now do it, because we need to take it through. Okay, so if I can, then I think it is the issue around the refineries, and then the question around, I think the cost of technologies, we have dealt with that, and December consultation, data costs from EPRI and how much was budgeted. Fortunately, we paid nothing because somebody else paid. Eskom provides the, Eskom has the relationship with, in fact, EPRI stands for the Electric Power Research Institute. It's not it's supposedly a utility platform. It's hosted in the US, but most of the utilities affiliate to EPRI. So I think we need to be clear about, you know, it's almost like an institution. It's like a university, you know. So, and I'm not being flippant, Chair, but I go to a university. I don't care whether it's you know, in the US or it's yeah. So this is
in the US or
in the US or in Johannesburg or in China for that. It's not an ideological, as my DJ is, it's not an ideological issue at all. It's pure, you know, it's a power research institution that is hosted by them.
So your relationship with ESCOP.
So fortunately, Chair, the relationship is not with us, it's with ESCOM, so the question could be posed with ESCOM. Then, Chair, there was the question around, I think we dealt with biomass. Now, Jacob, there was a question about the decline in capacity. I think there's a, that we need to distinguish, to explain capacity and energy, because IEA is showing the decline in capacity, yet what we're saying is that our scenario shows an increase in the code. I think that was... well, the one that I had was that was, I think, Honorable Mohamed Lala's question was around what the IEA is referring to about. Because you do have a slide that shows the table, and then you show the energy and the capacity separately. But anyway, so we can come back to that. Then, Chair, the big question, sorry, there are two big questions, and the one I was hoping to defer to my DG and DM, when do we hope to table this in cabinet? Incidentally, this is not legislation, this is policy. So it's not like we're going to introduce a bill that says, you know, that it's more about the policy that will get promulgated, and it has a specific connotation in the law because it is used in the Electricity Regulation Act and it's also used in the Energy Act. So, Chair, I think it's a very pertinent question as to now how do we integrate processes that relate to us as the from the executive, in other words, cabinet, and the legislature by, you know, in a manner that does not contradict. We say something about, Chair, the difficult one that I was hoping that we might be able to is the issue around policy incoherence with ESCOM refusing. I thought that issue, DG, we have resolved, right? It's very clear, it's been made as clear as possible from the highest, you know, level that, in fact, it is government that makes policy and ESCOM implements policy. So the issue around the signing of PPAs has been, you know, hopefully dealt with. The rest of the technical issues we'll find a process to deal with. But there is no uncertainty as to government making policy and then ESCOM making a parallel policy. Will you take the last one? Chair, through you, Jacob.
It had to do with the question from the chair around the plans and what this plan is saying, and then other things happening. Chair, in the reports that was gazetted with regard to the assumptions, we were very clear because we anticipated this coming up. It's because what you don't want is that while you're busy updating, you don't want to create a gap, you know, to say planning stops until the new plan is in place. So we're very clear in the document that the promulgated IRP remains the IRP until this IRP has gone back to cabinet and it has been approved. I think it's down in the report. And we're saying, because as indicated, the 2037 that you see is work in progress. As I indicated, when you run the scenarios, you could end up with a completely different plan on the table, you know. So we cannot use the preliminary base case, you know, for decision making. I think that's the difficulty around this thing, because it's work in progress.
Okay. I did see that. I'm sure the DM will clarify that. Are you commissioning 2037 or 2023? ESCOM says 2024, this thing says. So there can't be confusion around that, because if it's 2024, then certain things have got to be done now. So they can't be done now if it's 2037. So there can't be confusion over that thing. I think that thing has got to be clarified. Okay, so, Mr. Apani, you sure you dealt with all the questions?
Okay. Sorry,
so we wait for him to finish? Okay, Honorable, okay.
Chair, just to clarify, the IRP, this IRP document, if it gets approved by Cabinet, will then supersede the 2010 document. Is that correct? Because it's still strange then that ESCOM is basing an RFI on 2010 on assumptions we know, Chair, from the graph that was shown today in terms of demand. Demand was here. Demand is actually nowhere near that. So, Chair, this idea that we are, you know, we can say we can base our planning on a plan that is so outdated, that is so wrong, that is so incorrect, that the assumptions are so false, instead of halting planning until such time as a new plan is in place, strikes me as problematic. So once this is cleared, does it supersede the 2015 or 2010 document? And then where does that leave Eskom, who will be 8 months, 9 months down the road of the RFI and the RFP based on the 2010 document? It's like a policy lacuna. What's the answer?
Policy what? Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I don't know that word you're using, but that is a difficult word for me. But that's exactly my problem. I think that thing has got to be resolved. It impacts on what we do too. You know, we have lined up our program, a large program on nuclear, because we anticipating that certain things were going to happen. If they are not going to happen, then we must change our program. There's no point focusing on a huge debate on nuclear if it's not going to happen now. So that thing is an issue. It does impact on what we do as the legislature. So I think there's got to be clarity, because it's not as if Eskom is standing still on the matter, waiting for you to complete the policy document. I don't understand this. Honourable Mambetla.
Chair, I want to assist the department on the question I asked earlier, which they did not capture properly. Hence, they have not responded to it. In the IEP, while international agencies for energy predicts a decline in the use of coal as a source of energy by 2040, the scenarios presented here shows the increase. And that increase is way beyond the new build, which is coming online, like Yokosile and so on. I find it contradictory. So I need to be clarified on that. And Chair, just a question of interest. Mr. Apani, are you looking at resuscitating Project Mthombo? Because where I'm sitting, that project died a natural death. It's not even in ICU.
Thanks, Chair. I think if we can start with the last question, if we can go into the detail, I think what the colleagues have shown is that there is a cost benefit that has been done in relation to a new refinery, Mthombo being in the Kuga in the Eastern Cape, as opposed to, or as contrasted against, importing more finished product. So that case has been made, and we have looked at the various costs and benefits thereof. So the decision can then be made on the basis of, you know, that analysis that would have been done. What I was indicating was that the IEP gives us the facility to analyze it and make informed decisions, right? And at the point where it will be, you know, accepted as the policy stance of government, then we will be able to make an informed decision about whether Mthombo proceeds or we continue to import. But I think, Chair, the short answer is that Mthombo is not completely dead in terms of what there is a possibility that it might be resuscitated. Then the question, I thought I understood the question. So, Chair, there is a slide that we show about Energy Jacob just after the table on the base case. There is a slide that we show that shows the coal and the nuclear capacity as opposed to the energy that we use. Did we remove it? Yes. On the IE. Yes. I was going to come to that. So what has happened, Chair, is that, in fact, it's a big point that we omitted to mention, is that there is a research element in the plan which relates to technologies going into the future. Our stance has been that we've got so much coal in this country that we cannot abandon it. So it's not, you can have coal, but it will be cleaner coal technologies going into the future. So it's not like coal completely, you know, stops being part of our energy mix. But what we say is that it's not the, he does have a slide on that, but anyway, that's fine. It's the fact that coal contribution in respect of emissions will be lower, but it is still a local coal. So what the IEA shows is that, in fact, coal usage globally will decline, but it's expected to be replaced by other technologies. And in fact, even in our scenario, what Jacob has indicated on the IRP side is that the capacity beyond Medupi and Kusile is going to be reducing. The energy contribution will be, and so it's like we're not closing the gap. I mean the door on coal going, you know, into the future. There's a lot of, by 2050 there might be very, very clean coal technologies that are viable to introduce integrated gasification, underground coal gasification, and so on. So then, if I may, there was a question that was raised earlier on around energy efficiency. I think Honorable Makai did allude to the fact that we needed to, we're not doing much on energy efficiency in the, and I think it links to the question around explaining again the relationship between the IRP and the IEP and the IRP. Is that we're saying in the IEP that the energy efficiency strategy and action plan, it has actually been developed. We adopted the National Energy Efficiency Strategy up to 2015, and we're now in the process of defining the deliverables beyond 2015, and that's how it finds its way into the, sorry, Honorable Faisal, Honorable Emeka, it finds itself into the energy planning. What my colleague showed was the relationship between the various plans. You know, so we haven't done justice to it. People are going to be asking, but what about biofuels? And we have mapped that. There is a biofuel strategy. It has been developed, and this is how it fits, you know, together. And I think it's the same with energy efficiency. We haven't gone to town today about what is the strategy itself, but it is an element of the integrated energy plan. So that was that question around. And then there was also a question, trying to leave this one around when we intend to table last, but there was a question also around, oh yes, why are we not covering the distribution sector, the transmission, yes, DG, so there was a question around the extent to which this gets affected in, and I think you did allude to how we, so there is a specific scenario that I think you might have called it wires, yeah, so in one of the scenarios, no, you call it network, yeah. Electricity network implications. That's distribution and transmission. So there will be a specific focus. That was one of the shortcomings of IRP 2010, that it did not make any considerations around the cost of evacuating the power. So we ended up in a situation where the IPP developers were putting projects in the middle of nowhere, and then thus creating additional burden on Eskom to evacuate the power. So that has since been cleaned. The cabinet approved the renewable energy development zones, and these are the corridors where land use, environmental authorization, transmission, and so on has been, if you like, approved. So we have it's almost like we have a geographical layout of where the projects are going to go as well. So that's the question around transmission. Chair, when do we take this to when do we intend, as indicated, our timelines, and I think this is a discussion that DG raised as well, is that milestone two, what we have left now is to collate all the public inputs and indicate how we have dealt with them, right? So that will be done as in now. I know there is a target to table this in cabinet with the, you know, with the first considerations around public inputs and also with the scenario. So I would say that it would not, my sense is that it would not be before June this year, right? It might be around July, August. But if cabinet says go back and consult, then some more, then we would it would in the hands of cabinet in that sense. That's why we've been conservative by indicating that what we can do, what we have control over, is that we will run the scenarios. We've got the outputs in relation to the scenarios. We will factor in the public inputs, and then we will table this as the next, if you like, as the next step, as the next milestone, and we're then dependent on the cabinet for that. And then, Chair, I think with that we've covered all the questions that I have recorded, unless if there are others that we might have forgotten.
Can we close? Deputy Minister?
Thank you, Chair. I'm sure we can close. Chairperson, just a few things that I think maybe we need to take into account. The issue of the dates that you've raised there, 2024 versus 2037. I don't know if the Chairperson will recall at one stage when I raised it with you and said we should also be careful about the status that we give, because I said it is not correct for us to be calling an ESCOM here without the department, because we've now given them a status of making certain policy decisions. I think those things actually come back to bite us, because we are supposed to be making policy. So part of the decisions that Cabinet Lekgotla has taken is that the two ministers need to actually sit down and finalize this issue, because ESCOM is not a department. It is accountable to a department. But of course, there's the issue of that we make policy, and therefore that cooperation is actually needed, because that's what brings around some of these the policy uncertainty that Honorable Member was speaking about. But I also want to say a second aspect, I think, is that it would also be helpful for us to have a discussion with public enterprises to not just dismiss the issues that ESCOM is raising, to put them on the table, analyze them, and be able to take a decision way forward. Rather than just say, you are saying it doesn't, what are the numbers? Why are they raising this? Can we counter it? Because we deal with the technologies. We understand the technologies. Can we deal with that issue so that we stop the confusion? Because there are some valid points that they're raising, but I'm sure we can make decisions around those. Because sometimes as government, we have to make choices that might be costlier, but are actually much more beneficial to us as a country. So those balances that we need to make sure we can take without just throwing the baby out with the bathwater. The issue of Mthombo as well, whether it's Mthombo, it's another refinery, I think the IRP and the IEPs are tools to assist us in planning. So they would highlight the issues that would be happening, and then we have to make decisions. Do we make a decision to say it's easier to just continue importing versus actually having a refinery? So those decisions are being made, and some of us are arguing very strongly that we do need the refinery capacity for a number of reasons, and we've had some very unfortunate experiences in the past because of this lack of our own capacity in some of these things. So those are discussions that get informed by what is being put before us. The issue I've raised earlier, Chairperson, I think we need to also come back to the different technologies. I think all of us have seen in the news that we are launching fuel cell technology. It's not discussed here, and yet we deal with energy and we deal with electricity. And platinum is a key component, and it's from South Africa that we're getting that. Where does this fit in? So I think as we do some of these things, we need to factor in that we cannot ignore the issue around the fuel cells, because it's going to play a very critical role in the future of energy in this country. Whether it's the cars, as the companies want, but we are looking at it in terms of electrification, because it's easier and quicker to deploy as well. So I just thought I should bring those issues. Chairperson, on the cabinet issue, we might have plans in terms of when we'd want something to go to cabinet. Before it gets to cabinet, it goes through the cabinet committees. And I can assure you there's going to be some very serious and robust discussions. We will be very fortunate to finalize this process before the end of the year, because there will be the issues of people raising and saying, but agriculture, we haven't, you know, looked at that in the same way people have been raising and saying, in my village, the consultation. So those issues are already on the table, and we need to just be aware and ready for them. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thanks. Thanks very much, Deputy Minister. No, no. In terms of the time frames, there may not be complete certainty, but I was just asking for our own planning here, so that we can call you back to have a discussion on the documents when they are near ready. We have got to look at the issue of the fuel cells. We haven't had this discussion yet. So we may, at some point, it's a discussion that we must have. We will, ESCOM, we will make sure that next time when they come here, they do come with the Department of Energy. So I think the last time when they were here, they were with the department, actually. So we will do that, that going forward, they always come with the Department of Energy, so that there's no disjunction. Okay. Yes,
normal. This thing of ESCOM, how we are engaging on it, we are engaging on the short-term solutions. I was just whispering here on the Deputy Minister that there's one solution.
Oh, yes, I know.
Locate ESCOM under the Department of Energy, because where it is now, it is not located properly. That's the long-term solution. Otherwise, we'll sit there and bite our fingers when it comes to the issue of ESCOM.
I know the long-term solution, Honorable Ambassador. We agree with you. It's a big issue. We'll have but we agree. We agree with that position. Thanks very much. Are we? Honourable members, do you want to sit to look to adopt Mr. Quartus minutes? Okay. You can be excused. Thanks. Thanks very much, dear man, DG and the team. Members of the public, thanks very much. It's not a closed meeting, okay? You can sit in if you want. But I'm sure you don't want to be listening when you're discussing the adoption of minutes. Honorable Makai,
Chair, I have support of at least three members who would like to defer this to next week, possibly four, which is a majority.
Is that agreed?
No.
Honorable Faku? Honorable Faku?
The disagreement to defer the adoption of the minutes. Agreed?
I'm told there was a caucus there.
Okay, please, can we just have a look at the minutes again so that next week you can just adopt the whole package? Thanks. I remember, Honorable Noban. Okay, the meeting is closed. Thanks very much.